LSAs at Sebring, harbinger of a good year? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest today is Jim Campbell, who is ANN's CEO and editor-in-chief, and who is making the rounds at the U.S. Sport Aviation Expo in Sebring, Florida, late last week and over the weekend. And I wanted to get Jim in to talk about some of what he saw and how it may impact Aero News coverage of this segment in the future. Jim, thanks for taking some time out for our listeners today.
Glad to spend the time, Paul.
Well, you've just gotten back from Florida, and I wanted to talk, first of all, about something that I saw as it would happen on Facebook, and it was someone who apparently was connected with the show organization, and they were making the comment that they were kind of ambivalent about how the show was going. You know, it looked like it might not be a real active year, but when they actually walked the flight line and talked to the vendors, they counted 11 aircraft sales on the second to the last day of the show. You've obviously talked to a lot of companies down there. What was their take on how the show went this year?
It was actually fairly positive. Keep in mind that this is not a tire kicker show. It's not held during a time of the year when people are on vacation. It's not particularly warm or tropical in Florida in January. As a matter of fact, we usually have to deal with a cold spell or some rain or something. I mean, it's a nice place. And at the same time, though, Sebring is not exactly what you would call in the middle of everywhere. It's in the middle of nowhere is what it really is. It's at least an hour out of Orlando, an hour out of Fort Lauderdale or West Palm or any of those areas. So it takes a little bit of time to get there. And once you're there, it's a reasonably sized city, but that's about it. It's only known otherwise for the Sebring races and so forth that occur at the racetrack that's literally right next to the airport.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be dedicated to go there. I mean, it's a great facility from a standpoint of flying. It's a lovely airport, and it's very well managed, and the facilities are beautifully done. But to come out to the U.S. Sport Aviation Expo, you got to want to.
Well, obviously, some people wanted to. How was attendance, and then how did that relate to sales?
Well, I was told by Sebring officials that Thursday was slightly down. Friday was hurt by storms. Because we had a fair amount of rain go through. It wasn't that long a duration, but what came through was pretty significant. We got flooded out.
Mm-hmm.
But Saturday was a nice day, and the crowds came out. We had a pretty good set of traffic there for Saturday. Sunday, of course, is, you know, it's busy only through the middle part of the day, and then everybody's heading home. Sunday's out an afterthought. But you make your bank on Saturday, and indeed, Saturday was a good day to go by.
Well, it's encouraging to hear that. It seems last year that the Sport Aviation Expo and then later HAI were both very robust shows in a year where not every sales-oriented and trade show did too well. You got to fly a couple of neat airplanes while you were down there.
Oh, indeed. And that's the best part of shows like this, where we've gotten to a point where it's hard to fly anything at Oshkosh without locking away hours upon hours to get in and get out and so forth. And let's face it, flying at Lakeland's just plain old gotten dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Sebring is a place where you can actually do a fair amount of flying, not take your life in your hands, have a good time. There's a couple nearby airports to go to, takeoffs and landings, and not have to worry about the traffic pattern and the demo pattern. And overall, it's been a great place to operate out of. But we had a chance to sample the Carbon Cub, which is just a magnificent piece of engineering, and it flies even better than it looks, which is hard to believe because mm-hmm. it's extremely well-crafted. And we had a truly wonderful flight, the Flight Design MC. They're all-metal flight design offering for the flight training market that'll be taking steps to get infused into the market later this year.
Now, the MC, which I understand stands for Metal Concept, has been shown for a while now. Is it just coming a little bit more slowly than maybe anticipated in development, or have they been doing additional research to change it for the flight school market, or any idea there?
I think they've just been studying it carefully. Let's face it, it's been a tough year, and I think everybody is doing what they have to do very carefully, very studiously, and with a minimum of overspending. However, whatever they've been doing to it, they've done it right. The airplane is very stable. It's got a very well-defined static margins in all three axes. It's a very dynamically stable airplane. It's a reasonably fast little critter, 100, 105 knots all day long. It's a very docile airplane in the low-speed arena. It's not a runway hog at all. It slips awfully well. It's got great visibility. It's huge inside. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really is. I mean, two full-grown adults, you're not even rubbing elbows. It's really quite nice. Overall handling qualities are delightful. I mean, you definitely, you know, amp the rudder a little bit to initiate any roll. Pitch is very pleasant. And it's just a really delightful flying little airplane that feels very solid, rides the afternoon bumps pretty well, and handles a crosswind exceedingly well. And even though it's a kind of fat, you know, wide airplane with a lot of side area, it's also, you know, very aerodynamically composed. And I was surprised at how nicely it handled cross. And we did a hard slip to touchdown on a number of them, and could plant that thing down very quickly. I mean, 300-400 feet, no big deal.
Very cool. It sounds like they have addressed, you know, what the major questions will be in the flight training market. When we come back from the break, let's talk about the AeroNews LSA Challenge, because I know you had a chance to talk to some manufacturers, but you mentioned before we got started here that you actually talked to some just people walking the lines who had some comments about the process. My guest is Jim Campbell. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from AeroNews.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin WAAS GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the soup, you gotta have an opener. Garmin WAAS GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond Aircraft's D-Jet is the ultimate private aircraft for the owner-flown market, offering simplicity of operation, safety, and affordability. Imagine starting the turbine with a simple push of a button. Push the single-lever throttle forward. Monitor your flight on the cutting-edge G1000 with integrated autopilot and enjoy the reliability, performance, smoothness, and quiet of turbine power. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the AeroNews special feature. Paul Plack here with Jim Campbell, ANN Editor-in-Chief and recent returnee from Sebring, Florida and the U.S. Sport Aviation Expo. Jim, just before Sebring, you announced on AeroNews that we were going to do something called the LSA Challenge. And This reminds me of what the auto magazines do within a class of automobiles. They do driving tests and comparisons and compare price and fuel economy and a bunch of other things. And they have experts do that, some of whom are not on the regular staff of the magazine. And it sounded like something very similar was going to be the process for this. And you talked to some manufacturers, but also some people about their expectations for this.
Indeed. As a matter of fact, we got stopped as we were just walking around at Sebring by a number of people who are very interested in it, both from a standpoint of what they wanted out of it, as well as some who had been through the buying decisions and had suggestions for things that ultimately surprised them or they didn't give enough due to when they were in the process of making their own selections. The LSA Challenge got a lot of attention. I was really pleased to hear that because it's also gotten a lot of great feedback. A number of manufacturers have indicated, yeah, let me at them, no problem, we're not afraid of it, and let's go to it. And I'm kind of intrigued by the fact that the folks that I expected to do the best under the circumstances based on their reputation so far are easily the ones who are most anxious to prove themselves. And that's, of course, a very good thing. Mm-hmm. At the same time, talking to people just walking the walking among the tents and the display areas, there are people who are very concerned about being able to get in and out of their aircraft. They're very concerned about maintenance issues. How hard is it to pull? How hard is it to look at brakes? How hard is it to check for a fuel leak? How hard is it to get to progressive maintenance items? They're very concerned about engine selections and which engines are ultimately going to be easier to work on than others. there. I mean, I've got a list, and I was taking notes, plus the email. Every time anybody talked to me, I asked for an email follow-up just to make sure I didn't forget anything. Nice part about the little iPhone, though, is you can actually record the conversations, and we did that a number of times. But I've probably got 80 or 90 bullet points that we're going to be looking at over the next few weeks as we design the first LSA challenge, which we expect to take place sometime in June.
You know, one of the things that struck me about that category when it first came out, you know, it's called light sport aircraft, and there was a lot of talk of it being a new entry level for the sport and in general into general aviation in general. But obviously, the people who can go out and write a check that size are often past the point in their lives where they're an FAA standard person. Let me put it that way. A lot of the planes in that category didn't look like they were designed with that in mind.
And that was an interesting conversation. I ran into an old friend of ours, Dave Jewell. Dave has done some work with ANN and before that U.S. Aviator many years ago. Matter of fact, Dave's stock and trade is writing what I think is the penultimate sport in general aviation article on the rigors of doing business in this business. He called it ITBOA BNITBOB, which stands for in the business of aviation, but not necessarily in the business of business.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that there are a lot of hobbyists out there who didn't necessarily know how to do business and so forth. But Dave was out, and Dave, like myself, is a guy who basically is, you know, been through the drive-thru at McDonald's once or twice. you know, that kind of thing. Not one to turn. And he was looking at a number of the aircraft and remarked to me that, you know, there are a number of these aircraft that either really didn't fit the now average person that well and certainly didn't make it easier for the now average person to get in and out. Matter of fact, Dave, who has written for us in the past, as I noted, has penned an article that will be out in the next few days on that very subject. But he had some very interesting things to say about a number of the aircraft, and he literally went around and tried them all out. And I was kind of surprised at some of the data he came back with. And it's certainly something to be considered here because for the time being, our biggest market is the older generation that really doesn't want to deal with the FAA and the medical issue. And, of course, is not necessarily as thin as they used to be. Or, for that matter, not as mobile as they used to be. I mean, I know for a fact I have an interesting time getting in and out of airplanes because, frankly, I've got knees with 3,000 skydives on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't say that all of them have been really smooth landings.
Well, I understand that, and it's interesting to see that being addressed. I know that there's a reason that Buicks come with bench seats, you know. So, well, Jim, I appreciate this update and kind of a look, you know, behind the curtain on this thing. And do you see anything emerging as something to watch for in 2010 in this segment, either a particular company or an industry-wide trend in general?
Well, I have to tell you, I think the fallout's going to start this year. I think we're going to see the 100 and some odd aircraft that are out there start getting whittled down. And I think we're going to wind up with half a dozen major manufacturers with the generic airplanes for everybody. And then I think we're going to wind up with about a dozen other designs that meet special needs, whether it be the amphib types or the powered parachutes or some of the rotorcraft. One in particular that fit just an incredible niche, and I was so amazed to find out is legitimately an LSA, was Cubcrafter's Carbon Cub.
Mm-hmm.
This thing's got 180 horsepower on it. But at the same time, with the big Tundra tires on it, and big flaps, and they've just pulled every high lift trick in the book on this thing. Flat out, it barely does 120 knots. Matter of fact, the most we saw flat out level speed was about 118 knots. It flies 105 all day long. It climbs like a bat out of hell. It flies delightfully at 50, great at 40, sublimely at 30 to 35. My first takeoff was about 100 feet or so. My landing was about 150. And that's a hard slip in, great visibility, incredible fit and finish. I couldn't find a ding, a dent, a scratch, anything that didn't fit well. I mean, keep in mind, Carbon Crafter has been a Cub refitter for years, and they know the breed as well as probably as well as Piper.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be those special needs or special value airplanes. I mean, this is a stole airplane. A friend of mine named it the airplane that allows you to take your airport with you.
Yeah.
And you know, 150, 200 feet, piece of cake. I mean, seriously. And an airplane like that, mind you, it's not a cheap airplane, but the quality in that is just so impressive that you're not going to sneeze at the fact you're going to pay a little bit more for a special purpose airplane like this one was. And I think we're going to see other aircraft like that, whether it be aerobatic, whether it be amphib, whether it be specific training uses and things of that nature. I think those are going to be the other survivors outside of the Piper Sports, the Skycatchers, the flight designs, the Go-Boshes, and so forth and so on. Well, ultimately, you know, the big thing we're waiting for are two things primarily. One is for this industry to develop some sense of respectability from within itself, i.e. earn its respectability, and two, the industry itself to support it in the style it really needs. We have this tremendous potential, and both sides have a little ways to go to meet it.
Well, Jim, we will watch with interest. The LSA Challenge may be part of proving out both those things, and we appreciate your insight from having been at the event.
Well, we sure appreciate it. And keep in mind, Paul, we're going to draft you for a couple of these LSA challenges, so be prepared.
I'm ready.
There you go.
Jim Campbell is ANN's CEO and Editor-in-Chief. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.